Hello and welcome to IndieInterviews.com, a weekly radio show where we interview independent musicians to get their perspective on their music, their history, and the world around their art. On this show, your host Garrison Reed sits down with Eric Johnson of the band The Fruit Bats. Eric discusses moving to Seattle, recording Spelled and Bones, and the dual life of a craft services musician.
Right by the water, you can hear seals barking from his front porch and see Mount Rainier and everything, so it's cool stuff.
Their latest record, Spelled and Bones, is their second on Sub Pop. The record represents a synergy of changes, band members, producers, and Johnson's own home place. Here is a snippet of Lives of Crime from the 2005 record, Spelled and Bones. Band will be the musical guest on Last Call with Carson Daly, Wednesday, October 5th. The time spent making Spelled and Bones was quite longer than the process for Mouthfuls. How did these processes compare?
Well, Spelled and Bones we did at Dan's house, our guitarist, and so it was, and not that we weren't comfortable during Mouthfuls, because we did it at Brian Deck's studio, who's a good friend of ours and everything, and, you know, you feel very at ease there, but it's still like a studio, and you're paying for it, and, you know, you wear your shoes the whole time and everything, and at Dan's, it's like you're barefoot, and there's rabbits, he's got pets, you know, so there's, like, rabbits running around your feet, and cats, and you can actually hear in the background his wife, like, taking out the recycling and stuff like that. So, yeah. It's kind of got, I mean, it just definitely had, like, a more laid-back vibe, obviously. I think for the next one, I want to even go, like, I want to, like, rent a house somewhere. Even go, like, further out into the wilderness and really do it like that. I'm definitely into that. Like, totally, like, kind of never want to record in a studio again kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was pretty much the huge difference, was bunnies running around our feet while we were recording.
What motivated you to want to spend more time in the, or that just required because of the space?
Nothing really, it was more or less required because of the space. Nothing more than just the fact that, you know, we're kind of like, well, you know, we gotta give him time to be in his home and everything, and it initially wasn't even really going to take that long, and then we realized, like, it wasn't going to come out for a while, so why not just kind of keep going with it, and, so it was not, it wasn't necessarily this thing that I was like, okay, it's going to take this long or not this long, and, that was pretty much it.
Did you record a lot that isn't already on the record?
Yeah, there was a ton that, that sort of...
shelved for now.
Not only alternate versions in some songs that, that just didn't make it. Some songs that we put on the this limited edition LP that we put out, Tragedy Plus Time Equals Fruit Bats, which is sold out now, but that had some of those alternate songs on there.
Cool. You had recorded twice in Chicago. What made you want to start recording with Dan?
Well, I think... I don't even really remember. I think it was like the last time I had visited Seattle, Dan was like, he's been in the band before, then he wasn't, because he moved to Seattle, and then he sort of decided that he was ready to start doing it again if I wanted him, and I was like, sure, man, and then, I don't know, I had a few different ideas for different ways I wanted to do it, you know, one of which was just do it with Brian Deck again in Chicago, the other was to do it with my friend Brian Tester in Oakland, who lives, like, in a real, real urban environment and has sort of, like, a loft recording space. And that would have been totally different. The other was the idea to do it with Dan, and it just ended up making the most sense because he was in the band. It was going to be basically free. I just, like, bought Dan some stuff with, you know, we used... Not... He bought some of it with his own money, too, but we used, you know, some of that money to, so that he could
pump up gear,
pump up his gear a little bit. And yeah, it ended up being really cool. And just because of, like I said before, it was like, his neighborhood and his house is just awesome. And they have this really sweet house, and it's right by the water. You can hear seals, barking from his front porch and see Mount Rainier and everything. So it's cool stuff.
Yeah. To what extent did Gillian contribute to this record?
To Spelled and Bone, she wasn't actually on it at all. Yeah. So, like, she wanted to be. I mean, because she left the band under really, like, friendly circumstances and everything. And it was more just like, you know, we're recording at 2,000 miles away. Do you really want to come out? Because she sort of, she quit the band because she was not, just didn't want to put the time in. She wanted to work. She was sort of sick of being poor and sitting in a stinky van with a bunch of guys. So,
yeah.
She definitely, like, I was like, you know, she had, the invitation was extended. It just never really worked out. So, but I think people, you know, a lot of the super fans kind of got attached to her being on Mouthfuls, but didn't really realize that she wasn't on the first album at all.
Yeah.
And wasn't in the original lineup, and that it's just always changed. So, you know, she was a huge force on Mouthfuls, but it kind of keeps changing. So,
when you play the songs with her that were on Mouthfuls live, how does that work?
Dan sings the high part. We can all sing pretty good. Dan and our new drummer, Ron, we can all hit really high notes. So, we just happen to get a band full of guys with the high tenor voices who can sort of do those girly harmonies. I mean, in a lot of the harmonies, not all of them are Mouthfuls, but a handful of them I did anyway. So,
yeah.
It was more like sort of dude singing, or however you want to put it.
Do you feel that Spelled and Bones, like, acknowledges the departure of her?
Yes and no. I mean, like, people have sort of read into that, and, like, you know, I don't want to say for sure, really. Like,
yeah.
It's like, I don't ever want my songs to be... My songs are, of course, all personal, but I don't ever want them to be so personal that there's some kind of really specific story that's not going to relate to anybody else's life, so... I mean, I write songs on there that maybe people would allude to think that are alluding to that fact, and maybe it is, maybe it isn't, like, mm-hmm. Or maybe, you know, I just try to make it more general, so, mm-hmm. There's a whole, like, sort of batch of new songs on there, too, which are, you know, totally about some of the things I was experiencing in Seattle, and sort of, I was in my transition of, you know, that's how I ended up moving there, was doing that recording. So I was in my transition of moving, and so there's a lot of things about sort of a new life that I was starting and all that.
Wow.
Up the lookout!
How did you guys get connected with Jay Ryan, who illustrated the art for the album?
Jay, I never knew Jay in Chicago. I probably sat next to him at a bar like 20 times or something and stuff, but I still have never met the guy in person that mm-hmm. I know of. I would probably recognize him if I saw him, but I didn't actually get hooked up with him. I got hooked up with him through the Jeff Kleinsmith from the design department at Sub Pop, who was uh-huh. like, "Do you know Jay Ryan from Chicago?" And I was like, "I know the name." And I didn't even have the name attached to the artwork. Like, It was, and then once I saw his stuff, I was like, I immediately recognized it and was like, yeah, let's use him. He's awesome. So, yeah, I love what Jay did.
Next week, you guys play Last Call with Carson Daly. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I'm totally shocked about that and completely kind of mortified, too, a little bit. I don't exactly know how to feel about it. It's going to be kind of weird. I'm excited about it, though. It's totally cool. It legitimizes us all to our parents now, pretty much. And it's like, you know, you get on network. It's definitely... I can't believe any of this stuff has ever happened, so it's like one weird thing after another. And if you would have told me, even that I'd just be doing anything at this time, like 10 years ago, I would have been like, no way. No. So, just being on that is just like another completely bizarre thing that I'm gonna have to deal with. And everything that happens to us, I totally am like, well, it could be completely gone tomorrow because I still have a day job and stuff. So it's like one minute you're on Carson Daly getting picked up in like a limo from the hotel and stuff. But it's like we're still not successful enough where it's like I do that and then a week later I'm like working, like making food for people. And like,
here's your little sandwiches, right? Yeah, that's like, what I read.
Yeah, so... making like little sandwiches for people and stuff, and nobody knows who the hell you are, and nobody cares. So it's completely we're in a really bizarre position right now with that, where it's like, you know, I'm still kind of like living two lives right now. Yeah. One that's really,
but like, one that kind of makes the other one seem a little more real.
Yes, it's absolutely
humbling for sure.
It is humbling, and I think it's probably best that way. Not to say that I want to continue to make sandwiches for the rest of my life, but but for now, yeah, I certainly
benefit from that.
I'd certainly benefit from that. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you kind of have a vision of what you want the follow-up to be, or the next record?
I do, and I don't want to say it because every time I always find like I have talked about it in the past, and then it just never turns out that way. So
yeah.
I just want to like have it sort of as this weird. It's inexplainable. It's inexplicable anyway. How I want it to be. So I'll just say it's a weird little dream I have in my head. But I don't know. We'll see how it turns out.
I read an interview where you said like Zeppelin 3.
Yeah. Well, I will say that in that like, you know, outside of the fact that I can't really explain what it's going to sound like, but like Zeppelin 3 and the fact that I want it to be like a split album, maybe even a double album, although we'll see about that. It's very ambitious, but with an acoustic side and an electric side, like the way that Zeppelin 3 was. Yeah. So.
Do you think that the hauntingness of the undercurrent will become more present in the electric side? Or
I don't
like
know.
It kind of how it is.
I'm just gonna tell. Yeah, I'm just gonna sort of see where it goes. Hopefully it'll be different. But like I said, it's all just as far as how it's gonna sound is sort of, you know. I will tell you, I want to rock out harder on the harder stuff, and I want to sort of mellow out even mellower. Like I want to, instead of sort of having
higher
it be
contrast.
Down the middle, I want it to be a little more contrasty. So,
cool.
But you know. Like I said, I always say these things, and then it's going to be not... It'll be like a rap album or something, so... Probably not, but... Hey, don't you look, don't look, don't see. No, your vision's just the road on which you drive away from me. You gotta have love like a fire.
Thanks for listening to IndieInterviews.com, a weekly podcast where we interview independent musicians. More information about our guests today, the Fruit Bats, can be found on their website, fruitbatsmusic.com. Music samples in this show are from their 2005 full-length Spelled and Bones. For more information on this release, visit subpop.com. For more information, including a transcription of this interview, please visit IndieInterviews.com. For feedback on this podcast and the materials used in its production, send your thoughts to IndieInterviews@gmail.com. Thanks again. See you next week. Just a God of